Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment. All right, and welcome to this week's episode of Better Construction. This week, I am thrilled to have with me Braden Douglas. Braden is the founder of Crew Marketing Partners and also a successful author, recently released an Amazon bestseller, becoming a leader of impact. So, Braden, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you taking the time to jump on the show here. I've been following your company for a while now and curious to see, you know, how it started, how you got started. Maybe before we jump into my questions, though, you could do a quick intro for people listening.
Sure. Yeah. You know what? I've always been involved in marketing from, you know, getting involved in a business degree at Wilfrid Laurier in Ontario. Graduated, started working with Procter & Gamble marketing fabric softener. So if you ever had Bounce and Downy, that was my first foray into it. And then I worked at PepsiCo and Frito-Lay marketing potato chips. So for any Mark Messier fans, got to shoot some commercials with him in the early 2000s and yeah, had a lot of fun there. And then I had a life turnaround and said, you know what, I love marketing. I just don't want to be in a big corporation. And so I came out west to work at a nonprofit organization to give back to the world and quickly realized I love nonprofits. I just don't want to be in them. And so I thought, you know what, I love to really help business owners and entrepreneurs be successful, to really help, you know, them make more money and then be able to use that money to really impact others. And so I started Crew back in 2007 and have been growing it kind of throughout Canada ever since.
Okay, great. Awesome intro. Something that I'm always curious about, when you were younger, was marketing and business something that was an interest for you? Was this kind of part of the plan, or how did you become interested in marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love the game Monopoly. And I have actually memorized the whole board, all the rents for any kind of house and stuff on it. And so for me, business was always, I just love the game of business and even marketing. Like, I love watching commercials. I love seeing what they were doing. Why were they selling certain things? And so it was already this intuitive. My parents even kind of make fun of me that, you know, I was always kind of into it at a very young age. And so I think as you progress, I didn't really know what marketing was. I didn't know. I thought it was advertising. I thought it was, you know, just being a business person until I got into, you know, high school and took a business course and realized, oh, the aspect of marketing and strategy, I really enjoyed. I really love learning about target audiences and why people buy and, you know, sales and how does this all work together to actually create a profitable business. And so that just naturally brought me to wanting to get my business degree and then pursuing that in that way.
Oh, that's really exciting. Yeah, for me, I'm always curious about that. I mean, I've been in sales and business development for about 15 years now. And for me, as growing up, that was never like a thought that might be a career path. And in school, you know, I wasn't really introduced to it and just kind of came into it by, circumstance. But it's always interesting to see how people get into that. So you did work for obviously some very large, well-recognized companies and then made the shift to starting your own company. Was that a really thoughtful, drawn out process? Was that a let's try it and see how it goes? How did that kind of work for you?
You know, it's interesting when you talk to entrepreneurs, a lot of us, you kind of just do it out of necessity. And so when I was at the nonprofit, I thought, you know what? I think there's an idea to bring really good marketing to small, medium-sized businesses. And I said to my wife, hey, I think we should try it. And she said, well, if it doesn't work, we can always find a job somewhere or fall back on something. And so you just started to got connected with our first client. You get into it, you bootstrap your way. And then, you know, one client leads to another one. And then you start to have a point, though, where you say, well, you're either going to go all in and grow it, or it's just going to be this really small lifestyle business. And so we just said, you know what, let's just go all in. So we didn't pay ourselves for the first year, pretty much lived off of a line of credit. And my wife was on mat leave on a teacher's salary. And so we call those, the peanut butter years. But you just start to pursue it and knowing that, hey, we want to hopefully build something that's meaningful. And as long as you're doing great work and you're really seeing value in the market, I think that's when, you know, people tell others and word of mouth, you know, keeps going and you start to, you know, build it out.
Okay. So with Crew, you know, a lot of companies, especially I find smaller kind of leader driven companies, tend to have a very strong purpose. So what does Crew stand for, and kind of what's the long-term purpose for it?
Yeah, I'd say we actually get all of our employees to memorize our mission, vision, and values. And so, you know, for ours, you know, it's really to grow brands that inspire, you know, that impact lives. And our vision is to be a global brand for good. And so we wanted to, so for us, it's about, you know, that impacting lives and growing brands is that it's all about growth and really helping our clients do well. So it's not just about, hey, we want to do some really cool ideas and great advertising and great, you know, new brands and products in the market, but it's really saying, is this what that business really needs and helping them really grow well? And the hope is that they're going to then in turn impact lives. And that's going to be providing for their family. That's, you know, whether it's giving money to charities, employees, really helping the economy and the local communities. Because as an entrepreneur, you are sometimes a big fish in a small pond, and you're stalwarts of the community, and you have a responsibility, I think, to give back, to provide good leadership, to be good role models, to really do good business practices, because people look up to you. And vision wise, for us to be a global brand for good was to, I wanted to give our employees an idea that it's bigger than a local market. It's bigger than even Canada. It's something that we wanted to have, you know, bigger aspirations to get, you know, keep us focused on a bigger piece, to say, hey, the reason that we're doing processes and procedures, the reason that we're thinking this way is that we can hopefully scale if we're doing a good enough job. And for good means we're not just doing it so that we can make a ton of money and retire and buy vacation properties somewhere. It's so that we can really make a difference. And whether it's supporting organizations, it's being able to offer, you know, better salaries to employees, to really make sure that, you know, that we're influencing the world for things that we think are going to make it better.
Okay. And so you had mentioned earlier that you'd like working with nonprofits. I know some of your, some of the brands that you help are nonprofits, but there's also obviously for-profit companies in there. What makes an ideal client for you?
Well, for us, the ideal client is a business that understands that it needs marketing. It wants to grow. It wants to expand or acquire new clients, get more business, have a stronger pipeline. They don't necessarily have the skill set internally to be able to do that. And so they really need to use a partner, similar to how you'd use a lawyer, an accountant, or an engineer is how you'd use a marketing professional. So we would come in and create a strategy and a plan, help you understand who you're targeting, how to go get them, how much money do you need to then charge for that? And then here's going to be that positive ROI, and that's going to, you know, and then we help execute it. So whether it's developing your website and, you know, digital ads and new content and revenue, you know, and basically, you know, client acquisition strategies. And so for us, it's working with those companies that are either expanding geographically or expanding services, and they need a professional partner that will help them get there.
Okay. And I know from, you know, knowing some of the people that work for your company, you guys have a bit more holistic viewpoint on marketing. So I think a lot of people, they hear the word marketing, they think like graphic design and, you know, Facebook ads and that type of thing. But you guys really dive into the business development, customer acquisition, all of that. Is that a very kind of conscious choice for you as a more of a full service firm, or how did that come about?
Well, I think that, you know, you're right. There's a lot of, you know, because marketing is unregulated, there's a lot of people that can do marketing activities. Just like in construction, there's people that specialize in concrete or, you know, whatever it is, whatever aspects of the job that are required. But what we do is we look at the business, and there's four P's of marketing at the foundation: product, price, place, promotion. And so what we do is we look at your product first and say, well, where are you really good? And a lot of, you know, when we're working with construction companies, a lot of them, you know, they can do a lot of things, and so they have a really hard time focusing. And so what we try to say is that, well, where are you really good? What processes do you have in place? Who do you crush it with? And can you really form a great reputation and niche in that market? And is that niche big enough to be profitable in? And so what we say is that, hey, if you're really good at building spec homes, or if you're really good at building, you know, larger custom homes, you know, get really, really good at that. And is there a certain design style even that you can even get more known for, whether it's, you know, craftsman style or modern or, you know, whatever it might be, to really help you hone in on who are you talking to. Because the one thing is that even, especially in construction, there's so much sameness out there. There's so many people doing the same thing. So we have to really get in there and say, where are you really unique in the market? How can you differentiate yourself? And then get people to understand that. So for us, looking at your product mix, then we look at, well, what are you charging? How much? How does that work? Then your sales strategy. Well, who's selling? How does that work? Are you losing clients when they ask you for, you know, an estimate or a quotation, or you meet with them for the first time? And then the promotion. How do they hear about you? How do they get to know you? What is your presence in the market really look like? And what you realize is that if it's not consciously done, a lot of builders, they rely on their own personal network, past relationships, referrals, and it's a very reactive approach, hoping that, you know, things come their way. And I think that they have to do a little bit better job of being, you know, more specific about who they're going after, how they're talking to them, and talking to them in ways that's not annoying. That's not just some used car salesman be like, hey, do you need a property? Do you need any construction work? You know, we're here for you 24/7. It has to be a lot more authentic than that, because people can see through that and they hate that stuff. So, you know, really trying to get them to be professional, to put their best foot forward, and to have, you know, to build relationships quickly, to earn trust so that they trust you with these big projects.
So when you're having a client that coming to you and approaching you to engage your services, what are some of the things that you hope or want for them to already know coming into that? Like, what, say you're a small construction firm and you're thinking, okay, I need to up my marketing game. What type of internal work can they do before they start to engage a firm like yours?
Well, I think the first first thing that's super annoying for any professional service, and probably even for a construction company, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I'd like you to move that sidewalk over there and I want you to do it like this. And like, for me, coming in and just saying, we're not the experts, you're the experts. And from a marketing perspective, and really working together is always the best starting point. But for me, it's really understanding, what do you really want to do as a business? What are your objectives? Are you trying to grow by 10%? Are you trying to increase revenue by 1 million, 2 million? 15? Are you looking at new services? What are those specific organizational decisions that you are looking to make? And having clarity on that is really important. Do you want to grow geography, you know, geographically? Have you done a little bit of homework on that to see who the competition is, what's around there, or do you need us to do that? And then really kind of understanding, well, how much are you willing to invest in your growth? And for some people, you know, they have no idea how much things cost. And so they're like, hey, I'd love to do all this work and I've got $500. And you're like, well, you know, you can't really help you. And so for me, the rule of thumb is, a lot of times we're seeing clients spending between 3% to up to about 10% of annual revenue in terms of all their marketing and sales activity. And so that's kind of the rough estimate that we're looking at. But for me, the biggest thing, it doesn't matter what you're spending as long as the ROI is there. And that's the key thing, is to really bring everything back to, are you actually getting a good return on your investment? If you're spending X amount of dollars, how many leads are you acquiring? What's the value of those leads? Are you closing those? Are you getting the right quality of leads? You know, because you can spend a lot of time, you know, with people that are not the right fit, or a lot of clients that are just, you know, kicking tires, and that can be really annoying. So those are the kinds of things that we like to see, you know, when we're having those discussions, and then just being open. I think the worst thing, you know, for me, when we're talking with somebody that's a prospective client, is that it really is a bit of a partnership, and you have to trust us enough to be open with the reality of your numbers and what's happening, so that we can actually give you the right information.
Okay. That makes sense to me. I mean, I think, you know, marketing is one of those facets of business. I think it's probably, for a small business, it's probably the part that people take on themselves the fastest, because they know somebody who knows stuff about Instagram or, you know, something like that. Like, generally, you know, if you need legal advice, you don't take that on yourself by going on Google. But if you need to figure out how to market, sometimes, you know, that's something that people do. What are some of the biggest misses that you see small businesses doing right now on the marketing side of things?
I would say the probably the biggest misses is just getting into and you know, a shotgun approach when it comes to digital marketing. I think right now there's this concept that, hey, digital and social media, it's free and I could just do it. And so you kind of see them posting pictures and doing stuff and it looks like they're busy, but the stuff that they're doing is sporadic. It's one-offs. It's reactive. It's sometimes it's good quality. Other times it's not. Like, it just feels like this. They kind of feel like they have to do it, but yet they don't really know what they're doing. And then it can reflect really poorly on them, or they're just not getting the results from it and they don't really know what to do. But the alternative is maybe spending money on it and doing it badly is not good either. So I can see a lot of, you know, a lot of guys, they're just doing stuff. And it's like, it's kind of like, I don't know, let's sponsor this and let's go to this and let's do a print ad here and let's get Google ads going and SEO and my wife can do Instagram and let's get her to post pictures. And it's like, whoa, what's your plan here? What are you trying to actually accomplish? You know, and are your actual leads coming from these sources, or are they just, you're just hoping that if you do enough and you do enough of the right things, you know, the results are going to magically come somehow.
Yeah. I think that the key thing you said there for me is to have a plan. Because I think there's all sorts of different things you can find on the internet. And some people are saying print is dead and other people saying print is good. And, you know, trade shows are gone. Trade shows are the way of the future. Everything's changing all the time. But if you don't have a plan for it, like anything else in your business, you're not going to be going in a direction that's going to be too successful long term.
Well, you know what? It's like, would you build a house without good blueprints, without a good plan? Right. Yep. The answer is, well, you could, but I wouldn't recommend it. Yeah. And because there's a lot of issues that can come out of it. And if you're doing like a small deck, yeah, you don't need a big blueprint sometimes, but you know what, but if you're actually doing anything substantial, you have to have a good plan and you have to have trust in that plan that it's going to work.
Yeah, that makes sense. Shifting gears a little bit, something that I'm curious about that is a big topic amongst a lot of the builders that I work with is talking about high performance construction. So whether that be something like Passive House or Net Zero or these, you know, different energy efficiency standards. And the big debate is always, do we put this as part of the code or do we put this as something that's voluntary? Most builders seem to fall on the voluntary side, but where the question comes with the marketing side is, how do you differentiate your house with non-visible changes, like performance upgrades that are not, you know, a granite countertop or, you know, a flagstone roof or something like that? What are some of the ways to market these high performance benefits that are not immediately visible to homeowners?
Yeah, you know, that's a great thing. And what we're seeing with trends and stuff is that this will become a much bigger area for sure. And I think that you can't play ostrich and put your head in the sand and hope that it didn't go away. And not everybody cares about it. And there's a lot of people that say, oh, that's ridiculous. It doesn't really make a difference or whatever it is. But I'm telling you right now, it will take more form because this always happens with early trends that are built on good data. It's going to make a tangible difference. It's going to become more part of legislation in the future, maybe a little bit slower than people think, but it's going to get there. And this is the hardest thing with these things right now is that people they say they want it until they realize the cost and they're like, man, maybe it's not worth it because they can't really see it. Right. And you can't, you know, it's not like you have a Tesla in the driveway and people are like, oh, that's sweet. You know, you've made it and you're green. But I think that with a lot of these lead performance-based construction, I think there's going to be something where is there, you know, small insignias you can put, whether it's in, you know, brick of the home, whether it's in different areas, maybe it's like different pieces. So if you even see Fortis trucks or people that are powered by CNG natural gas, right? They usually put like a small sticker on the back of the car or the van, and it says powered by CNG. And they try to, you know, create a green leaf around it or something to call attention to the fact that, hey, you know what? We've invested in, you know, this type of gas or this type of, you know, energy because we think it's better for the environment. And we know that people, you know, do care about that. And that's the way, because if you didn't have it there, I would have no idea that that bus or that van was powered by natural gas. Yeah. And so for me, I think the industry has to do a better job of you know, helping people see that, oh yeah, this home, that's a lead home, or this is a passive house or something along those lines, that some identifiers, and I guarantee you, even homeowners, you can create your own, you can create your own kind of identity and logo around it, because it's not really regulated right now. And you can start to create this where you could have your, you know, it's like, you know, the PSI passive house, you know, making it really cool. And then having that as a part of the, you know, the, maybe it's like in the concrete, maybe it's stamped in there, maybe it's something else. So when people see it, they're like, oh, okay, that means something. And then you can then market that and try to own that as a part of one of your brand assets.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that I agree with you as it moves on, and we're already starting to see it in the luxury market. In the luxury market, people are coming and saying, I want this house, this many square feet, this pool. And I you know, I want it to be a net zero house, or I want it to be a passive house, because they've heard somebody else that's had a passive house or been in one and it's been comfortable. But having that tangible marketing asset, that makes a lot of sense. So like I mentioned in the pre-show there, a lot of my listeners are small business owners. And so some of them are very small. Some of them are definitely graduating towards a medium-sized business. For you as a small business owner, what are some of the surprises that you've run into growing and operating a small business that you wish you knew about when you started?
Well, I think that most issues for entrepreneurs, and we work with a lot of them, usually come down to people, finding the right people, getting them to commit long-term to work with you. And I find that a lot of times, you know, finding great people and then having good retention around that is difficult. And it can create a lot of disruption for a lot of companies, especially when they're small, because those team members really, they're a part of you. And so I think that if there's times when I think I wish I could go back and maybe pay certain people a little bit more to keep them to stay a little bit longer. Because at the time, maybe you feel like, oh, I can't really, but I value them, but I feel like I can't really do that. In hindsight, it would have been worth it. There's certain others that maybe you bring on a partnership or an equity conversation a little bit earlier on. Because you know what? They have the skill set. They have the right values. They're great people. And I didn't do that and they left and they're now, you know, running their own successful company. It's like, you know what? We actually could have been partners. We could have even probably been two or three times the size of both of our companies now. And so some of those things I think are, you know, are important. And then having a great culture where people come to work, where they love you as an employer because you're fair, you're fun, you care about them as people. And I think that's something that it's not just about business. This is about people's lives. And I think building into them is such an important aspect. And so even the book, you know, that I write, you know, Becoming a Leader of Impact, is that you as a business owner, you have to be working on yourself as a leader the most. You know, how are you working on yourself professionally, personally, spiritually? And I think that is like to be really good at your craft, having personal life, which means your relationships, your family, your personal health, and then spiritually, your motivations, your desires, your morals and ethics, all those things play a massive role in the kind of impact that you're going to have. And, you know, it's an interesting thing is that we work with many different industries. The worst clients that we have are in the construction industry. And I say that honestly, because for some reason in the construction industry, there has been a history or just this culture of either not paying people, not showing up. They don't do what they say they're going to do. They cut corners. They, you know, haggle on invoices. It more than any other industry, more than agriculture, food, professional services, energy, anything else, is they're not usually a problem. It's very clear, but in construction, for some reason, it's out there. And I think that there has to be, I think, leaders of impact in the construction industry to really say, hey, let's do things differently. Let's really make a difference and really be leaders that people love doing business with, that they're not pushovers. They're fair. They want great work done, but they're also have high integrity. And I think that's going to be so important for that, just, you know, for the communities in general, but even for the industry.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that there are certainly some bad players in the construction industry that have given the rest of the people in the industry who are great a bad name. And I think depending on where you are in the country, in some places in the country, I think that's just because there's a low barrier to entry. to start up a construction company. BC is a little bit better with that. We have a few more certifications and such that are required. But if you go across the border to Alberta, if you, you know, have $5,000 in a pickup truck, you can be a contractor. So it's sometimes that
sounds like a marketing industry. Yeah. You've got a laptop. Well, you know, hey.
Yeah, exactly. You can call yourself a marketer.
That's right.
So yeah, I guess let's jump into the book a little bit. You know, there are a lot of books about leadership. A lot of online courses about leadership. There's a lot of seminars you can pay a whole bunch of money to go about to talk about leadership. For you, when you started looking at this project and the idea of doing it, what were you hoping to contribute that was different? Like, why write a book, I guess?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I've read a lot of books, and I love, that's one of my favorite pastimes. And I wanted to write a book because I felt there was a need in the market of, there's a lot of books that help you professionally, even books that are personally, but nothing that really tied in professional, personal, and spiritual. And I think all three are really needed in someone's life to really think about. And so I wanted to write a book that was easy to read, lots of stories in it, you know, a good concept, an easy concept to understand, but not simple to actually execute. And I think that's where I really felt like, you know, a lot of leaders, I even talked to them, they want to be better. They want to be great people. They want to leave a legacy. They realize that time is short. They don't know. You don't know how much time you're going to have on this earth, but how do you really impact people? How do you leave a great legacy that you can build a great business, have a great family and personal life, but then also make great moral decisions and be able to really give of yourself in a meaningful way? And I think at the end, when you put it all back in the box, that's what's going to matter most. And so I wanted to write a book that helped inspire people with the organization of Leader Impact to really say, how can we help leaders be more impactful, to be leaders of impact in this world? Because if we can do that, then I think that every industry, community, country, and around the world is going to see massive changes.
Yeah. I mean, for me, my listeners know I'm into books. That's always the last question I ask. And reading through the book, one of the things that really struck me is the almost complete lack of handholding. You know, a lot of these types of leadership or business type books, they have a system, and they think, you know, if you follow this system, you're going to be successful, and that's all you have to do. Whereas this is really about personal accountability of the leader. Is that very similar to your management style as well? Or is that kind of something that you developed for the book when you were kind of going through the process?
Yeah, you know what? It's actually interesting that you picked that up, because my personal philosophy, and even what I say in the book, is that it's not what you do. It's not the five steps of becoming a great leader. And if you do them exactly, you're going to do this. It's about challenging yourself to be somebody different, to be actually think about this. So it's really more about who you are. And as you're leading people, if you have to micromanage them and tell them exactly how to do this, instead of really building into them principles and thinking, then you're going to get robots. And those things they're the worst employees, because they don't know how to critically solve. They don't know how to come to something and make a good decision. And you're always having to watch over them. And for me, my hope was that you can inspire leaders, help them, you know, give them sometimes a bit of a kick in the pants too, to say, hey, it's time for you to step up. Like, don't just think about, you know, working for the weekend or that next home or those toys or the hunting trip or whatever it is that you're going to do. Think about the life that you really want to live and the impact that you're having on your spouse, on your kids, on your community, because now's the time to do it. And you can do it. You can easily do it. And I guarantee you it will be a much more fulfilling life and a way better definition of success than what you're chasing right now.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Definitely highly recommend the book for anyone who hasn't checked it out. I'm going to put links to it in the description for the YouTube video as well as in the podcast. As I get towards the end of these episodes, there's always two questions that I ask. The first one's kind of fun, and then the second one's a personal interest question. But the fun question is, if you had kind of a magic wand and you could fix one misconception about impactful leadership, what would it be for you?
The one misconception has to be, there's a chapter on it, is that no one succeeds alone. And I think that a lot of people come to leadership and they think it's about me just doing it on my own and learning and stuff, but you really do need to do it in a community with people. And I think that's where groups like Leader Impact or other organizations where you can have a peers that really keep you accountable, build into you, is so important, because you actually can't do it alone or not as effectively as you think. And that takes a little bit of vulnerability, but you really do need to be with others who want to live that life with you, because it's not going to be easy. So you need people that are going to spur you on. You have this friendly competition with, or you know, when things are down, they're going to help pick you up, and vice versa. And so you really do need it to do it with a community of people around you.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think in leadership, that's one of the difficult things, is many other tasks within the business world or just generally in life. If you want to learn more about accounting, you can go take a course on accounting. If you want to learn to be a better leader, yeah, there are courses on it and some of them are good. And, you know, there are certain things when you're growing up that you can do to develop leadership skills, like certain sports and that type of thing. But at the end of the day, you kind of eventually get to a point where you can really only learn from other leaders, and they tend not to be kind of in school something you can go buy a course about. So yeah, I think, you know, mentorship groups, leadership groups, stuff like that is super crucial.
Totally.
For the last question, personal interest question, sounds like it won't be too hard for you to answer, because I think we have a similar interest here. But I have shelves and shelves of books, and I always ask people, if you could recommend a book, personal or professional, which one would it be for you right now?
You know, I've read a ton of leadership books, but I've really been getting into biographies in the last few years, because I love really just hearing the stories and stuff. One of my favorites that I just finished was Shoe Dog, which was the Phil Knight story of Nike. Yeah. And for me, it was a great read, well written. Misconception is that Phil wasn't really even didn't believe in advertising. Yet they've built one of the best brands in the world. And so it was actually like really interesting. But I love, you know, biographies. Elon Musk was another great one. Warren Buffett. But for me, biographies, because they really take you to understand what really happened. What were those decisions? And I think that's where, as a leader now, as an entrepreneur, I'm more interested in really hearing the real raw stories, because it's never as perfect and as cookie cutter as most of the leadership books make leadership out to be. It's more dirty, raw, in the moment. A lot of luck plays into it. People who you know. And I think for me, I'm realizing more and more that that's how life is. And the decisions that you make in those moments are so important. And how are you going to do that? And how are you going to make those right calls? And so that's where I'm more, you know, as my own journey kind of goes, is really into that.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, Shoe Dog's a great book. I really enjoyed that one. I've been reading a lot of biographies as well lately. Have you read The Ride of a Lifetime? Robert?
Yes. Yeah, I just read that a couple months ago, actually.
Awesome. Yeah, that one, I just finished that one. And same thing as what you were saying, the stories are so much more impactful than, you know, trying to, you know, just read the 5 tips on how to be a better leader, like actually seeing how it was used in real life.
Oh, yeah. And the Disney and how, you know, it's how you're going to make, you know, the Pixar acquisition and all those kinds of things. You're like, man, that's a really, it took a lot of courage to be able to do that and to be able to, you know, buy Star Wars and, you know, and when, you know, nobody really wanted to, and the Disney was fledgling at the time. So, yeah, I love those kinds of stories. I think they're great.
Definitely. Awesome. Well, Braden, thank you so much for your time being on the show. For everyone listening and watching, I'm going to put links down to the company as also as Braden's social media down below. And with that, have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody.